time has come to DIY your innovation, like it's HGTV. I say Martha Stewart your innovation if you want to succeed. To IKEA your innovation. Lay out all the screws and shelves and sit surrounded by it till you figure out how to do it yourself. Overthrow yourself to lead a coup against convention. Patent yourself to own your own reinvention. Kickstart yourself to crowdsource your help and wiki your wealth. You want to keep from being disrupted by someone else? Disrupt yourself. Every time you start talking tradition, interrupt yourself. Like, you know, we should just continue with our... I'm sorry, can I interject? Disruptors aren't distant storms on radar that you watch progress. They are termites you ignore until your foundation gets wrecked because you didn't think that those tiny piles of dust were a threat. You didn't think the market share they were serving could compete till they used it to perfect a new model that renders yours obsolete and then scaled faster than you can move your sluggish feet. So you need to disrupt yourself with your customers' future needs and their current speed so that you don't get black buried beneath the warnings you didn't heed. Write your action plan and craft your service plan. Design your passion plan and create your purpose plan. Because innovation is the act of creativity for the purpose of creation. When insight creates invoices, we call that innovation. It is the integral catalytic ingredient. It is collaboration. The intersection of industries ignited by inspiration. Innovation is the difference between asking, why didn't I think of that? And why didn't I think like that? Innovation is the difference between accepting what is and asking, what if? What next? What else? You want to wear innovation on your sleeve? Fine. Suit yourself. Don't be afraid to be self-made. Help yourself to success. Take a self-interest in your self-improvement to be your best. Because the secret to a culture of innovation for everyone else is simply DIY innovation. Innovate yourself.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Wow. So that's how we're going to open up Innovation Crush from now on. That's what I think. So everybody, welcome to another episode of Innovation Crush. My name is Chris Denson. I am your gracious host at Densonology on Twitter. That was Sekou Andrews. I feel like I'm going to have to speak as loud as you do. This is not how I talk.
Take it down.
And also, I'm going to let you tell me who you are as Sekou Andrews, the poetic voice, and walk us through a little bit of why that piece exists.
Who I am. Well, it all started a few years ago in my mama and my papa. I am a poetic voice. And so how that came to be was I was an artist. I was a musician. I was an actor. I was pursuing traditional labels and existing industries, and in the process of doing that, found spoken word poetry, started trying to build a fan base at open mics for my music, and eventually just fell in love for poetry, fell in love with poetry for poetry's sake. And then, of course, the entrepreneur in me, always being sort of half artist, half entrepreneur, the entrepreneur in me was like, well, what does that mean? And how does a brother eat off of poetry, you know? So then it sort of led me to start working in the business world and creating customized pieces for businesses. And then the aha moment that I had was going to conferences where I would see speaker after speaker after speaker, and then a poet or an artist or, you know, some sort of an artist, a comedian or singer songwriter that would break up the speakers with, you know, art and lift the spirits and open the hearts to receive the information for the next speaker. And I found myself asking, why is art the break from the content and not the vehicle for the content?
Right.
And so that was the aha moment that really led me to go, okay, I think I want to create an actual category of motivational speaking that uses art and infuses with art to make the messages more moving and memorable and more personalized and customized by telling, instead of getting up there and saying, I climbed Mount Everest. And here's how you, Google or Apple, can do it too in your business, you know? And I'm going to actually tell you the story of the mountains that you've climbed in your business and show you that you can do it again with a customized artistic piece that gets in your blood and your breath.
Right.
And that's what led me to kind of create poetic voice as an actual speaking category.
It's almost like a reignition. I think you touched on something that's very different than like, you can do this too because I did it, but you know, you can do it because you've already done
that's
it.
Right.
That's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah.
So when you talk about that first pivot point for you from, I don't know, poet? What does a poet do? Poe? Do they poe? Do they pomerize?
If you want to get really street with it and colloquial with it, then they spit. You spit a poem.
Okay. All right, great. Shakespeare spat.
That's right. Shakespeare spat a poem. That's right.
No, but when you look at that first pivot point for you, you know, that's a break from traditional poetry circuit to go business.
Yeah.
Right. Like, how did you think that would work? And this is before you say you start going to conferences and you see the speakers and you get that aha moment. Yeah. This is when you go, ooh, I'm going to start talking to companies.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm sure that's not the traditional path coming from, you know, the poetry community.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there are artists who just make art for art's sake, you know, and I've always been, I've always had that entrepreneurial component to me. You know, I've always looked at the end game and the purpose of it and how it is that I could do this. If I found myself loving to do something, then it was like, how can I keep doing it? And how can I do more of it? And of course, that leads to the question, how can I put bread in the fridge doing it so that I don't have to only do it after work?
Right.
And so that was the case with, you know, my music, with my acting. But with music and acting, there are multi-billion dollar industries in existence where you go, here's the model, you know.
Right.
With poetry, there is no industry. And so the traditional trajectory for a poet is, you know, if you're a full-time poet, that is, you start doing clubs and cafes, you know.
Right.
You're rocking the Poetry Lounge out here in L.A. You're rocking Fly Poet Showcase out here in L.A. You're doing the feature shows and the open mics, and you're selling your chapbook or your CDs.
Right.
And you hope you make enough money to make the rent that day, you know. And then maybe you sort of graduate to colleges. You know, where the checks get bigger and they're more they're more set, they're more you can count on them. But sometimes the audiences get smaller. Sometimes you're thrown up in a student union and imposing on people's lunch, and they don't care about listening to you at all. You know,
right.
So the shows can be whack sometimes. But you can make a good living as a college poet. You know, touring. I know lots of poets that tour and make good salaries. But it's a grind.
Note to self.
That's right. That's right. I can hook you up with the folks if you need. You know what I mean? Let you know. But that's kind of it. And then from there, folks that stay in it, they move into something. They move into teaching. They move into academics. They move into publishing. You know, anthologies on poetry. They move into something more literary. They move into an existing industry, right? And there's only a handful of folks out there that I know that are sort of creating industries for poetry, and that was more exciting to me. So when I was going to open mics, you know, for my hip hop, say. And then I found myself loving just being appreciated for my words without having to worry about the beat and the hook and the remix and the guest appearance and all that. But then it was sort of like, well, what do I do with this? And so for me, I actually found myself more excited about pioneering new trails for spoken word than I did chasing an existing industry, recognizing that I'm probably not going to be 50 Cent. I mean, the type of lyrics. I had more De La lyrics than I had 50 lyrics. You know what I mean?
Like 40 Cent.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, exactly. Or maybe a different currency.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I was two euro.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. I was more. I'm not going to say I was less than 50. I was just a different currency.
I just came up with my poetry name, 2 euro.
What? Son, yeah. 2 euros in the house. So that was really it for me, was just trying to figure out how to pioneer something that doesn't exist. You have to have that mentality. You have to be sort of, you know, have that blueprint of I'm excited about innovating something myself, you know, and that's the cloth that I'm cut from.
I think we all hit, a lot of us are lucky enough to find that. And I think what you're doing when you go and you do talk to these organizations, you know, it is helping them find that moment of inspiration as well. Cause not everybody, like you said, when insight creates invoices, right? And you go like, yeah, that's kind of like the formula, right? Yeah, when you say art for art's sake, you know, same thing when you go and talk to Google or you talk to eBay, you know, you don't create technology for technology's sake.
Right.
You know, you're creating this to do something so that there's that moment of sparking the inspiration. What does the rest of the poetry community feel about what you're doing? Like, is it too much of a removal? Like, for instance, we had a guest on the show named Kyle Cease. Mm-hmm. Kyle,
I know. I was just talking about Kyle yesterday.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. So Kyle's awesome, right? Yeah. Kyle's number one Comedy Central special, movie career. Mm-hmm. And then he starts doing these transformational workshops and things like that. And there was a large percentage of his, you know, constituency that like, eh, well, all right, good luck with that,
right?
You know, and he's made a killing off of it, and he does it really well.
That's right.
Was there sort of that divide for you, like, you know, once you kind of like, this is my path for now, or was it like, go ahead and do your thing?
Well, again, maybe, but here's the difference. Again, Kyle was part of a multi-billion-dollar existing industry.
True.
You know, there are no poets that have the fan base of a Kyle Cease. There are no poets that have multiple movies of their poetry and TV shows. And you know what I mean? There's not. So you, there's not that many fans to lose.
Right.
So, yes, I actually one of the things that I'm doing right now is I'm reengaging my sort of external consumer fan audience, because there was certainly a drop off in the sense that, if you look at my mailing list, initially you signed my mailing list because it was like, hey, Sekou's at a poetry cafe in Nebraska. I like his poetry. Let me know when you're back in Nebraska or when you got a CD to sell. You know, then all of a sudden I go from letting people know, here's where I am, here's what I'm doing, to I'm doing a bunch of B2B work. And it's all internal. It's all a private TED conference or a private corporate event, and they don't have access to it. So it's like, I hear you're in my town, but I can't come. So what good is that? You know.
Right.
So there was a long period of neglect of my consumer fan base while I was building this business side. So I don't think it was so much, oh, I'm not down with what he's doing. It was just, I don't really know. Suddenly Sekou's kind of dropped off and I'm building this other world.
Right.
And every once in a while they would hear something like, oh, I just, you know, I got married, or, oh, I just, here's something that I did public, or a public show or a feature. But it was very few and far in between.
Yeah.
So now it's sort of like I'm introducing my worlds to each other. You know, I just launched a video. I'm preparing some public presentations, and I'm doing things that are just sort of galvanizing my entire audience. Now on the poetry side, I'm certain that there are poets that are probably, you know, oh, I don't like what he's doing, or just like in the same way that literary poets have a problem with slam poets because they feel like it's sort of a bastardization of the work. It's all about competition and so forth. So there's a sort of divide in those worlds. I'm sure that there's probably a divide in the sense of people that are making a living off of poetry. However, I don't really listen to it, so I don't
well,
really know.
You know, I think one thing you really touched on in that response was kind of this idea of brand management, right?
Yeah.
You have to manage your brand, and I think every company goes through that, where there's a new iteration, and while we want to gain new clientele and new business and new, you know, audience, we don't want to alienate our current audience. Mm-hmm. And part of that, even in your brand as the poetic voice, you know, kind of walk us through even that nomenclature and why that, what, you know, how that kind of helps you bridge the gap.
Yeah. Well, and you're spot on with that, because, you know, I mean, the fact is there's always going to be haters, right? There's always going to be people out there that just don't like what you're doing because you're doing it differently.
Right.
And I honestly, I can't speak to, oh my gosh, I've encountered a lot of that. I just don't even pay attention to it. I'm always forward focused. As I was creating this brand, deciding what to call it, I mean, you know, I created Poetic Voice as a speaking category. One of the initial impetus, I always hate that word,
impotence.
Not so much there, but one of the—
You're the word master.
I know, and I hate when I'm the word master and then I struggle with a word, especially plural versions. They drive me bananas.
What's your favorite word?
My favorite word? It's the first time I've ever been asked that.
That's what I do on this show. I innovate new questions.
My favorite word would probably be TBD.
Okay.
To be determined.
Well, I'll ask again at the end of the show.
That's right. but as I looked at creating this brand, a big reason for it was, I was getting called all kinds of nonsense. You know, I'd get on a stage and it would be like, you know, oh, we got this speaker, and they would read his bio and it'd be all amazing. And they'd read this guy's bio and the proper introduction of him. And then it would get to me and it was like, and now we've got a number one slam dude, you know, or like the top street poet. And I was like, street poet? Really? Because that kind of makes it sound like you just picked me up off the street like 20 yeah, minutes like, ago. And like, was like, I'm going to clean you up, kid. Get in here and get on stage. You're going to be big, you know? And so I was like, okay, I need to own my own language. Clearly, if I'm creating something out of thin billionaire that I need to own and define the language. And so I'd struggle with strategic storyteller and motivational poet and all these different titles. And you have to imagine one of the biggest impediments in my world is the word poetry. I mean, it has a tremendous amount of preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about what?
Beret.
Yeah. The beret, you think about the beat poet with the guy, the bass line in the background, and, you know, what's his name? Mike Myers and So I Married an Axe Murderer. Right. Harriet, you know? You think about the revolutionary poet screaming at you, the slam poet shouting for 3 minutes, or the dead art form that you studied in high school, you know? Right. So I was up against that constantly. So there was a lot of reason and a lot of also advice to abandon the word poetry. Just right. pick something that has nothing to do with that. But when I really sat back and thought about my authenticity, the one singular driving force for everything that I do creatively in this world is my love of spoken word, my passion for it. Right. So I was like, how can I authentically create a brand that abandons that word when that's what's driving me? The screenplays that I write, the album that I wrote, the TV treatment that I write, all that stuff is driven by, here's how I think spoken word should be reflected in the industry. And it always gets watered down, and it always becomes this Love Jones, a sexy actor with dreads and incense around, and people are snapping, and you know what I mean? It just becomes this sort of watered down sexiness, not the fire that you get when you go to an open, when you go to like a New Eurekan or something.
Right.
So I was like, I need to make sure that I embrace this word poetry and what and everything that I do, but still grounded in something that people can understand. And that's why I use poetic voice as the name of the speaking category.
So give us an example, or give us a list, right? I wouldn't do it justice of where poetic voice has taken you, you know, on this client, you know, esque journey.
Yeah. Oh man, poetic voice, you know, any given month, you can look at, say, the past, you know, this month and last month. The piece that I opened with, DIY Innovation, was mm-hmm. done at an executive summit for a company, Vistage.
People love Vistage. Yeah. It's like the CEO.
That's right. Yeah, it's like a CEO summit, sort of inspiring CEOs, right? Healthcare. I do a tremendous amount of work in healthcare. Probably about 65% of my work. So I've got a nursing conference coming up. I just did a health insurance an event. I have a TED conference coming up. It's taking me to, you know, small top level executive meetings where it's like me, the president of Nike, and LeBron James in a room together talking about greatness.
In that scenario, are you performing or are you just part of the conversation?
It depends.
Okay.
It depends. It depends on how they engage me. In that LeBron situation, it was me presenting.
Okay. Okay.
There have been plenty of times where, let's say, you know, I'm with the top executives at General Mills or something, you mm-hmm. know, where it's I'm a part of the entire session, and so there's a presentational element where I'm inspiring them, and then there's also a dialogue element where we're constantly throwing around ideas and so forth. It's been, you know, it's taken me to huge companies, Fortune 5s like Apple and Google and Nike and campaigns where I'm the voice of an event or a campaign.
Right.
It's taken me to, you know, Oprah and Oprah's backyard performing for President Barack Obama.
What's Oprah's address again?
I can't really talk about it on air, but you know what I mean? Just
curious.
Just take a peek at my phone. So yeah, all over the place. I mean, it's been and internationally and just, you know, the thing I love about it and where it's taken me is that I love when I go to an open mic or poetry venue because they're there to hear what I do, and they love it. And so there's just this infectious energy. But what I love about going to business audiences is that I'm not preaching to the choir.
Right.
It's a jaded, skeptical, what in the world is a poet doing on my stage? I understand why he would be at the Christmas party. I don't get why he's at the national sales meeting, you know?
Right.
So I love watching that conversion happen. So mm-hmm. I step on stage, you know, especially black man with dreadlocks in the corporate environment and a sea of gray-haired white men. You know what I'm saying? And I step on stage, and it's like, oh, okay, here comes our guy that's going to dance for a minute, you know, and then I start spitting, and that you can just see the light bulbs go off. You can see the leaning forward happen. You can see the cell phones being put down, and you can see the tears start to stream in the laugh. And it's just like, boom, I got you. Boom, I got you. Coming back for you. You're hopeless. Not so gonna
do,
mess with
do
you.
You in that instance, do you? I don't know. Do you almost look at it as a sport of sorts?
Oh
like,
man,
like the conversion is kind of what drives
you. Yes, sir. Listen, I always say two of the biggest training ground. excuse me. training grounds for what I do that I credit as making me as successful in what I do as I am were one was the tour that I did for Norman Lear. Myself and my writing partner, Steve Connell, traveled around the country initially by ourselves and then joined with a beatboxer, a DJ, and four of the poets, traveling with an original print of the Declaration of Independence to inspire people to vote.
What?
Yes, I know. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But it was a challenge because it was a nonpartisan tour. Poets are very partisan, right? It's like, Here's what I want you to do. Right. Yes. Now, all of a sudden, we had Norman Lear saying, I want you to get people swearing to their feet. Jump into their feet, swearing to all that they believe in, but you can't talk about this and you can't mention this issue and you can't tell them to vote for this and so forth. So it was like, how do we get to the underlying universal truths of action and participation? That was a great training ground. And I very much credit Norman as well as my partner, Steve, and all the poets that we were surrounded by with that. And then the other one was slam. Mm. Because what slam poetry does, and you know, if we want to get into what a slam is, we can. But for those of you that
Google
know,
it,
that's right. Slam is their poetry competition. Right, their poet. That's right. That's right. Depending on who your sponsor is, right? They their poetry competition. So with slam, it's like all of a sudden I can't. It's no longer the open mic where it's like I just get up there, I do my soliloquy about a daffodil, and people snap and they go,
"I love that one,
beautiful."
By the way.
You like that one? Yeah. That's my earlier work. That's a signature piece. But now all of a sudden somebody's put a scorecard in your hand and you don't know me and they've said, judge this guy, you know, and give him a 1 to 10. So now I have to be accessible. I've got to convert you to someone who didn't even come here for poetry to someone who is going to give me a 10. Right. And that's a great training ground athletically to make me go, all right, I got next.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. What I noticed with the DIY piece and with a lot of your work is that it moves pretty rapidly. Right. And, you know, when you are in that, there's that sea of gray haired white men, how do they pick up on it? Right. Because it's, you know, it's a different cadence and maybe it's because they're being spoken to differently that they actually lean in to pay attention. Mm-hmm. My mom was a teacher for years. And one of the things that she told me, cause I was worried about my 8-year-old who had a teacher with a heavy accent. And my mom was like, actually kids tend to pay more attention to teachers with accents because they're trying to understand. Mm-hmm. Do you find that's, you know, from your cadence to the words you choose and especially just knowing those environments that you're in, like knowing the challenge that Google is facing at that moment in time, what do you kind of attribute to the intake or the conversion on behalf of the audience?
Well, listen, I mean, first and foremost, it's the power of art, right? So, I mean, the reaction that you have when you watch an amazing piece of theater or you see an amazing painting and it just rips you apart. You listen to an anthemic piece of music, you know, an orchestra or a song that you can't get the hook out of your head for years, you know. Art has an infectious, indelible power over us.
Right.
And so that's at the root of what I do. So I'm armed with that going in. Right. Through poetry, through the manipulation and use and harnessing of language.
Right.
And so I'm speaking in a way where I'm painting pictures as opposed to telling facts. Right. But they're hearing themselves in it. So that's the power of poetic voice. It's the customization of it. Right. They're hearing themselves in it. So they're hearing their story. They're going, that's me. But I've never seen myself or heard myself or thought of myself in that particular way. So I'm showing them a powerful version of themselves that they've never thought. And I'm showing them the version of themselves that is. And I'm also showing them something that they can live into, something that they can aspire to. Right. Right? So a big part of it is that now in terms of rhythms, now I'm using all of these all these verbal techniques that create a sense of delight and suspense, right? I pride myself on making sure that the audience doesn't get ahead of me so that they can't zone out.
Right.
So the minute they're thinking, oh, I got this, he's done now. You know, it's one thing when I'm doing a three-minute presentation, but when I do a 60-minute keynote, they can't believe that they were engaged for that long.
Wait, is it a 60-minute poetic keynote?
60-minute keynote, 90-minute keynote,
that's
all day.
Amazing.
All day. And they can't believe, because we're told in a society nobody pays attention to things for more than 3 minutes, 4 minutes. People's attention spans, ADD, digital technology, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Right?
Sorry, so I just checked my phone.
Exactly. Chris, come back to me. Come back to me, Chris.
I'm sorry. What were you saying?
And so when that happens, they are surprised themselves of, I can't understand how it is that you kept going, that you kept engaging my attention. And I think that's where you're really using the speaking techniques. When I do my speaker training, Stage Fright to Stage Might, which I'm launching this year publicly, but I've done it for corporations and executive mm-hmm. summits, I talk about, just when you feel like the audience is getting ahead of you, that's when you have to switch gears.
Right.
That's when you've got to move into a different modality. So you slow down, you drop your voice, you're changing your poetic technique, you move into a story, you go into a fact, you change your content, you do something that just continues to right. reignite their attention every time.
I think when you translate that into a corporate structure, right, there's a poeticism in that in and of itself, where, you know, companies, yes, like, how, like, you go, how does Google, I don't know, I keep using Google as the example, but I'm going to continue. How does Google keep, you know, reinventing, mm-hmm. you know, re-engaging? And it's kind of like, just when you think, okay, Google search is this, or, you know, YouTube is that, it's like, oh, there's a new feature, there's yeah. a new iteration, there's an announcement made, or we're going to launch, you know, YouTube Comedy Week. And mm-hmm. so there's always these constant iterations. So I think, you know, not only do people see themselves in their journey in the words, but in the delivery, yeah. right? You know, over the course of time, like you said, it's like, oh, I would have never expected you to say 60 minutes, let alone 90,
yeah.
you know, or just to be in the audience and sit there and, like, right. be engaged the whole time. But these companies, Levi's is a, you know, century plus old company, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. like they're just pants, yeah. right?
And props to Levi's for using poetry in some amazing ways.
Oh, that one commercial, the sparkler joint, yeah, running around.
Again, one of the big reasons why I started doing this was because I was, especially as a voiceover artist.
Because you like Levi's.
Love Levi's. Bring me in for a commercial. Got you. but you know, as a voiceover artist, especially, I would go in and for these commercials, and it would be like some fast food commercial where they were like, they had some copywriter try to do a poem, and it was like, lettuce is the bestest. The water trickling down the tomato. You know, it's like, really? You want me to? How come you just didn't get a poet to write it? And so I was like, well, how come I just don't be that poet? You know what I mean? So then right. that sort of was what led to me. All right, clearly, again, owning the language, defining it for the industry with the quality that we know it should have.
Right. My wife hates spoken word.
Yeah. I love your wife. Tell your wife, come to my show. I'll convert her.
And I told her, I was like, hey, watch this. Because, you know, I watch a lot. I've been to venues and things like that. You know, what advice do you give a naysayer, right, in terms of how to listen to, how to experience, you know, poetry?
I just say, watch this. Watch this. Right. I mean, listen, it's experiential.
Right.
You know, I don't know how many times, one of the most common comments that I get is, I hate poetry, but I love that. Right?
Right.
So again, that goes back to all of those preconceived notions of what poetry is that people mm-hmm. walk in with. People aren't used to really good spoken word poetry
right.
because they haven't been to the Poetry Lounge. They haven't been to New Eureka. They haven't been to Fly Poet. They haven't been to the venues that have the best of the best. And so they have some conceived notion of what it is. But when they experience it as it should be,
right.
it's amazing for them. It's cathartic for them. So I always just say, yo, watch this. Go to this spot. Check out this venue. Watch this person. And if nothing else, come to my show and I'll convert you. And if I don't, well, I'll send you to the person that will.
Right. How is it that, you know, we talk a lot about marketing and innovation and ideas on this show. And when I look at, you know, my role sometimes as a marketer is I say we're translators, right? Our job is to take a brand message and translate it into, you know, a mass message or mass activation, or, you know, if you say, you know, our candy is the sweetest, and then I'm going to go like sweet, I'm going to come up with something that's yeah. thematic and broadly accessible. And, you know, our job in a lot of these situations is to take a deep dive into our client's business, right? Mm-hmm. We don't know, you know, I'm not going to use Google this time. We don't know Apple uh-huh. like, you know, like Apple does.
That's right.
But because we're a little bit removed, I think it gives us a little bit of clarity in how to translate it, right? Because I am the audience to an extent.
That's right.
How is it that you're able to go to all these different environments and translate their, you know, specific needs. I know there's some broad stroke things that are common amongst, you know, each engagement, mm-hmm. but, you know, like you said, healthcare is going to be different than the LeBron James sure. conversation. So what's your process in terms of being a translator of sorts and connecting?
I'm sure you can respect the fact that first and foremost, it's listening.
You know? What'd you say?
Listening. It's listening. Chris, it's right. listening. It's funny when you think about just, you know, how the universe works sometimes. I remember in middle school when all the yearbooks were coming out, of all the things that I wanted to be voted for, I remember being voted for best listener. And I had no idea.
Really?
Yeah. And I had no idea where that came from. You know what I mean? And it wasn't until years after through high school and college, I remember sort of like, gosh, people seem to come to me and just something about the way I listen. People are always talking to me about their personal stuff. And then right. halfway through going, I don't know why I'm telling you all this, you know?
Right.
And again, I never wanted to be a psychologist or anything. So I didn't even know what to do with it or acknowledge that it existed. But now, as I think about my ability to go in and translate, if you will, and really capture each client's story and the uniqueness and the depth and the personalized aspects of it, the challenges and the aspirations and the struggles. The first step is just listening. I do a big creative download with them. And I always say, like, yeah, send me your deck, send me your PowerPoint, send me your videos and so forth. But I need to have a conversation with you because at the end of the day, you're a human being that's having this experience, right? I need to hear in your voice what you're struggling with. I need to hear what you get excited about, what makes you just giddy. Mm-hmm. I need to hear what makes you, when you start stumbling over your words. I need to hear all of that, right? So that then I can translate and give your audience a human experience. And that's always my goal. I always say that I live as a poetic voice. I live in the space between your necktie and your throat. Right. Mm-hmm. So because people will do things like I get advice all the time. Oh, nobody cares about anything longer than 3 minutes. You know, make it shorter. Nobody is going to come to your website for longer than so and so. They're just going to want to get on, get this information and get off. Right. And then what I hear from clients when I have that creative download is, man, I love the piece that you did for Nike LeBron, or I love the thing you did on Deaf Poetry. And I'm like, man, you had to dig. You had to be on there for a minute to find that. Right. You had to go through this and led you to Google and led you to YouTube and so forth. And they're like, yeah, I show this to my kid and they signed up and this, me and my grandmother listened to this. And so I go like, yeah, you started as a business person with your necktie tied up coming to my website. And when you left, it was loosened and you were a human being,
right?
You know? And so we shared a human experience together. So as part of my process, I'm always looking at what are the human elements of everything that you're talking about. And I start there. I build the piece around that. Mm. And then I go back and I add the content bling, as I call it. You know, here's where you hear your school color. Here's where you hear your seven values of your company. I make sure I fit all that in and I make it very dense with that so that you hear your story as an organization. But underneath that, you hear your story as a human being.
Right. No, that's brilliant. I mean, even when, you know, again, just theme to this show, the fact that you give us the innovation piece and, you know, 80% of it is stuff that, you know, is constantly in my mind.
Right.
And it's just said a different way. I think I retweeted you the other day with the I'm going to botch it. But it was the idea that innovation is where.
The difference between why didn't I think of that and why didn't I think like that?
Right, exactly. And why couldn't I say that?
Right.
So you're also, you given the world a little bit more content now, right? You have this video that went up recently.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So the video is my new baby. It's my new baby. I'm super excited about this because, like I said, I haven't really done much for the public. You know, my YouTube page was basically just clips of me doing corporate performances and presentations. And so now I'm re-engaging this platform, this public platform. And I was just like, you know, what do I want to start off with? And I've done a few videos. I did a piece called New Money that was for TEDx Wall Street that I shot a video for. And it's one of my new popular pieces, but I didn't really push the video and it didn't, you know, do huge things and so forth. But I didn't create it from the ground up. But as I sat back and said, what's the first one that I want to start off with? I have a poem called The Awesome Anthem. And it is sort of a self-celebration, a hilarious, inspirational self-celebration piece that just reminds people about their amazingness, you right. know, and just helps them remember that they are beautiful enough and powerful enough to get through whatever challenges that they're facing. And as I performed this piece, it became increasingly popular, but something else happened. Every time I say the words, I am awesome, I almost sing it like, I am awesome, and I hit this pose. For some reason, I just started hitting this pose when I would do it, and the pose started to catch on.
Right.
And I would discover that business partners or people in their marriage, whenever they would do something cool with each other, they would hit this pose, you know, and they would look at each other and hit the pose. And I was like, that's amazing. It's kind of got its own movement now.
It's like bolting. It's like the Usain Bolt when everybody
that's
was
right.
bolting for a
that's
while.
That's right. But. And it kind of just took on its own sort of organic life. And so I decided that I wanted to shoot the video in a way that it had people actually hitting the awesome pose while they were while I was spitting the poem, you know. And so I got this. I shot this video. A brilliant director by the name of Wayne Price, who was shooting with the community that I'm involved with, Summit Series.
Right.
And so we went up to Eden and we shot a video in a few different locations. And then I basically just had people from around the world submit themselves in the awesome pose. Mm-hmm. Right. So I've got like, you know, authors like Tim Ferriss. I've got actors like Omari Hardwick. I've got, you know, icons like Quincy Jones. I've got, you know, business folks like Simon Maynering and Jim Quick. I've got, you know, everyday homies and little kids and, you know, just right. all sort of hitting this pose to kind of show their place, reflect their place in the global community of awesomeness, if you will. And so literally I shot
the
video. Hey, listen, I'm going to make sure I get a clip of you before we leave, first of all, because the goal is really for it to be a user-generated movement where people begin to do their own versions of the poem. They shoot their own videos in the pose. And ultimately, I'm going to do a second version of the video where I will have probably me at the beginning, me at the end, and just nothing but amazing people in the world hitting the awesome pose.
Right.
So I'll make sure you're in that second.
I'm all over it.
That's right.
What do you get out of all this? You know, we spent most of this conversation about the service
yeah.
piece of it, you yeah. know, and I think when you are able to give creatively, there's something that you receive, you know, that probably can't be measured. But, you know, what do you get out of all this?
I get money.
Right.
Well, yes and no. I get the joy of being able to make a living doing what I love.
Right.
And that's critical. You hear me talk about that in the Awesome Anthem. You know, I get that joyful challenge. I get the joy of creating something that doesn't exist and owning something and defining something. And as an artist, that's, you know, when I talk about art for art's sake, like that's me doing art for art's sake. You know, that's the pure joy of creativity and,
right.
and action and creation, you know. I get to live a purpose-filled life. You know, I get to know that I am living in my voice. I have found my true voice and I'm living in that and that I'm living on purpose, that this is what I was put on this planet to do. And it took me a minute to find out what it was. It took me a minute to get here to, and then it took me a minute to embrace it and accept it and own it. But now I get to know that I'm on track every day. And
yeah.
all I have to do is just keep myself on track, you know?
Yeah.
And then I get the joy and the beauty of every day, just in new ways, seeing the people that I impact. You know, the responses that I've gotten from the Awesome Anthem poem have been amazing.
Yeah.
When I'm sitting back and creating it, and any artist knows this, you create it and you're like, if you're making a hip hop beat, dude, it's like, oh, I'm fresh. I'm about to blow up. You know what I mean? It's like, everybody, platinum, baby, platinum. Here I come, you know? Because
yeah.
you're the freshest thing in the world when you're mm-hmm. in that creative energy. You know
yep.
what I mean? And then it's the record label rejection letter and the homie that's like, it needed more bass. And all of a sudden, the world comes in and comments.
Right.
But initially, in that pure space, it's just you and what you're contributing to the world. So it's great to get that immediate gratification and that response from audiences that are like, this is what I needed to hear today. This piece saved my life. This piece made me believe in love again. This piece made me go back and look at my kids in a different way.
Right.
You know, it's the impact. That's what I get.
That's exactly what all of our listeners have wrote in.
Yeah.
All two of them.
That's right.
My mom. No, just kidding.
Well, now three since I'm on here.
Yeah.
That's what I do for radio
shows.
Hopefully
you listen
to it. I take it to three.
Exactly. I like how every you sound like you're delivering poetry in everything you say. Like, you know, I'm like, is he talking or is he performing right now?
What's funny about that is that just a quick sort of definition of what poetic voice is. A lot of poets, you know, there are poets that are speakers that get up and do TED Talks and so forth. A lot of times it's, here's my poem. Then you listen, then you applaud, then I talk about it, I set up the next poem, now here's the next poem, then you listen, you applaud, and so forth. And it's like a set, you know, it goes up and down. The way I define poetic voice is that it's a seamless journey. So you don't know when the poetry ends, and the content begins, and the comedy ends, and the storytelling begins, and it just becomes this one seamless journey where you're like, oh wow, he's talking, oh wait, he's rhyming, did I just hear a metaphor? Oh, what's happening right now?
Right.
It keeps you constantly engaged.
It's like a sensual assault.
I like it.
Yeah, write that down.
I'm going to use it.
So the show is called Innovation Crush, as you probably know. What, you know, in your world or otherwise, are some trends that you look out to the world and you go, that is awesome. You know, that is, you know, something that you're impressed by in the world that's happening right now.
Oh, gosh. You know, from a technological standpoint with innovation, I'm always amazed by anything that I'm hearing about that comes out of places like Singularity University.
Yeah,
you know, like when I listen to Peter and Peter Diamandis and Daniel Kraft and these cats give presentations, and I'm just like, oh my Lord, what is happening to the world? This is so amazing and so terrifying, and I don't know what to do with my. You know what I mean? Like
Ray Kurzweil is going to live forever.
Yeah, seriously. So. You know, from AI to robotics to, you know, genetics to all of it is fascinating. I always say, like, when I think, I never really want to live forever because I think that's horrible, you know?
Right.
But the only thing that makes me not want to die, really, is I kind of want to know what the future is going to be. Like, is it going to be Star Trek? Is it going to be The Matrix? You know what I mean? Like, right. I want to know. So technology continues to amaze me. I think, you know, I'm always amazed by just human spirit, human resilience. You know, when I just think about the ways that we, you know, like for example, when you talk about technology and how terrifying it can be, at the end of the day, it really does depend on the human spirit. It really does depend on what we do as a people, you know. And so the ways that when I just look at stories of people connecting and people helping each other and people being there for each other in ways as strangers, as nations, as communities, that is really, really the fruit of my inspiration constantly, you know?
It's interesting you say that because, you know, a lot of people, when you talk about social media or, you know, if you touch on bullying, right?
Yeah.
And that's obviously a big topic in news and in the trades and just in real life. Mm-hmm. But to me, there's a whole flip side to it where, you know, I always talk about social media as a form of acknowledgement, right? Like I have nephews that live in Michigan that I don't talk to them on the phone, but I can chime in, and you know, if I see something that where it sounds like they're having a bad day, I'm like, hey, you're all right. Like there's this ability to actually engage with people in a meaningful way. And you know, I've worked for companies that were social media oriented, and you know, for example Machinima, right, which is a large YouTube channel, a lot of their creators were so thankful for the opportunity because they were literally sitting in their parents' basement playing video games, depressed, unhealthy, sad, you know, and sometimes even suicidal.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there's this acknowledgement that happens, and then there's this trajectory, and then you want to do more of that one thing that you didn't think meant anything to anybody. And you know, I think when you talk about the human spirit there, and then there's the two sides of it, because it could go the other way. It could go the bullying route.
That's right.
You know, but I think there's more stories of just that ability to be acknowledged for being who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
There's no question there. I just wanted to take over the show for a minute.
That's right. As if it's your show or something. Apparently you got it confused.
It's my Jerry Springer moment. So, CQ brought us a... That's
right. Here's the Chris reflection.
So finish this phrase for me. innovation to me is...
I thought I started the...
I know. Started, now,
didn't I? You're going to make me repeat myself?
Yeah, do the whole piece over.
Innovation is the conversion of insight into invoices. It's the conversion of creativity into creation. It's the conversion of... It's the addition of purpose onto your passions that leads to something you can hold, something you can see, something you can use, and most importantly, something that benefits the world in some way.
That's great. Most times I have to ask people to explain, but you did a pretty good. One of my favorite answers was a woman named Carla Ballard, one of our like first, maybe third or fourth show. But asked her a question.
I know Carla.
Oh, okay.
That's my homegirl.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah. See? Tell her you were here. I need a wall so I can just have everybody sign it.
That's right. You get like a little mind map. So I know him and her. That's my homie. That's my cousin. You know, exactly. My ex-girlfriend.
I impregnated
cool no
her.
That's right. Exactly.
Not Carla, but, you know, just
disclaimer.
No, she goes, innovation to me is pancakes. And like part of we kind of sat here. I have a co-host who works with us sometimes, Robert. And we were like, OK. But she goes on to explain, like, you know, you start off with something relatively plain and you can make it however you want to. Right. Yeah. You can add toppings. You can have it hot. You can have it cold. You can put butter. You can put syrup or none of those things. Like, that's, you right. know, it's taking something that is relatively easy and plain and adding, you know, a little bit of your own personal design to
That's
it.
Right.
I want to thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, this is awesome. I'm glad I hope you had a good time.
I did.
Notice I've been trying to make my voice deeper as the show has progressed.
Keep going lower.
Have you seen it? Have you ever seen the video, the YouTube? It's an audio clip. It's an audio clip of Barry White. And he was recording something for a radio, like a promotional bit. Uh-uh. And he would read, and then he would get mad at whoever wrote the content. So if it was like, if I was reading your bio, I'd be like, poetic license helped to, who wrote this? Like but it's his very deep voice. And he's like, oh, and he starts cussing like, oh, fuck it. Oh man, Sekou does more than just inspire. Oh, what? Who? it's the funniest thing ever.
That would be hilarious in Barry's voice too.
How can people find you on the interwebs?
So definitely first and foremost is SekouAndrews.com. It's S like Sam, E-K-O-U, Andrews. .com. Make sure you check out the Twitter. Follow at Twitter, at Sekou Andrews. And also make sure you hit up the YouTube page and hit up the Awesome Anthem, because that's a new baby and it will inspire you. Should I jump into it? Do you have a second to jump into it?
I think so. Yeah, let's do it.
I'll give you a little closing taste of what the Awesome Anthem sets up here. Let's see. Where shall I jump in? Okay, I'll jump in here. It kind of goes all over the place.
And that's fine.
And it's a self-celebration piece, but this is one of the sections that at least is a little bit more powerful. I'll admit, I used to think that awesome was a word for surfers and smokers, skateboarders and valley girls. But I was like, totally mistaken. Awesome is gangster. Awesome is stupid fresh. Awesome is the new crunk and the new cool beans. It's the new bomb diggity and the new bee's knees. My new mantra that helps me breathe into all that I believe and realize that within me is all the might I'll ever need. Because there are those days when I'm pushed to the edge where still waters meet earth and I fall to my knees to gaze upon the water's surface. But as I stare at my reflection with these broken down eyes, God sees his reflection in me from the other side and says to herself, I don't know what he thinks he sees, but he must not be looking at me because I am awesome. Like the science of miracles and the mathematics of purpose, awesome. Like how our brains can always calculate the what of who and the when of where, but our souls must solve for why. Awesome. Like the thought of God and logic, having faith that we will figure ourselves out. Awesome. Like how the moment I truly discovered the great I am is the same moment I discovered how truly great I am. And I am not perfect, but I'm perfect as I am. I'm not beautiful like I used to be. I'm beautiful like I am. Like the scar where a breast once was. Like survival, where a death once was. Like the better, where a best once was. Every gray hair a trophy. Every wrinkled fold a story. Every pound of fat a challenge. Reminding me, there is always something to pursue. And always something to celebrate.
That is awesome. I actually have goosebumps.
Nice.
So thank you, man, for being here, for sharing your story.
Thank you.
I think a lot of people will be innovatively inspired.
Beautiful.
So that is all, folks. Thank you for tuning in. This has been another installment of Innovation Crush with Sekou Andrews. We'll talk to you next time.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.